history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some incredible stories out there just waiting to be heard if we'll take the time to ask a few questions and listen. We really want to make sure our veterans know that we're thankful for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And on that journey, boy, do we learn a lot. We learn a ton. We're educated, we're entertained, and often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Today I'm in Sonora, California, home to Joe Haritani, a veteran of the 442nd Regimental Combat Team during World War II. You've heard about the Gopher Broke unit before. We've heard from a lot of Nisei veterans. But let's hear Joe's story. So you were the son of a preacher. Your dad was a Methodist minister?
That's right, yeah. His first church was in Washington State, Tacoma. And then they moved to Loomis, California. And I went through grammar school in Loomis. And then from there, we moved to Livingston. I went to high school there. And then from there, after graduation in 1941, I think, I went to started in Modesto Junior College. And that was when December 7th happened. And we were evacuated and put to concentration camps.
And I want to hear all about that, but I want to hear a little bit about the earlier years, too. So your father's a minister, and you had a lot of siblings, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. The eldest was my sister Mary. She's gone. My brother James, who's also gone. Then me, and below me, Thomas, he's also gone. And then sister Grace, she's the widow. And then sister Irene, also a widow. And then the youngest was David, and I think he's now a grandparent. Hard to imagine. Seven kids.
And I'm sure they were counting along as you went through the names. Yeah, seven kids, and you were toward the top of that. What do you remember about that childhood? What were the things that you said, hey, when I grow up, here's what I'm going to do with my life?
I just remember in Florence, California, going strawberry picking. And the other thing I remember about Florence was that it was the first time I saw a little minnows in a ditch and a pool near the church. I don't know why, but that made a big impression on me. Anyway, after a few years in Florence, then we moved to Livingston, California. I went to high school in Livingston, graduated in 41 to Modesto Junior College.
I always remember Livingston because that's the first place I ever hit a home run in high school, playing for the Los Banas Tigers, yep. But there was quite a substantial Japanese-American population there, right?
Yes. I think there's a history of some rich Japanese from Japan bought a large acreage in the Livingston Cortez area. He either sold little like 40-acre farms to different Japanese who were immigrating into the U.S. I grew up in Livingston through high school, and all of my neighbors were farmers, mostly fruit trees like peaches. Anyway, after I graduated from high school, then I started Modesto Junior College. That's when World War II started.
So, and I know some of what happened after that, but I'm curious, in high school, did you ever experience any kind of discrimination? Were you treated differently because your last name was Japanese?
No, high school was really great. In fact, I had a Caucasian girlfriend in high school who were active in sports. Livingston, I think the high school population was only about 400, so it was a small school. Yeah, it was good times back then.
So you go to Modesto Junior College, and what were you studying? What were you hoping to do?
Well, I started studying engineering. My family didn't have money. I mean, my father being a preacher, poor preacher. I did the same thing that my older sister did. Worked in homes, do the dishes, help cook, clean the house, and I did the same thing for a while.
So in order to have a place to stay while you're going to college, you would do the household chores for that family you were staying with?
Yeah, and my family had a furniture store in Modesto, and after the war broke out, they put their heads together and then told me that I'm going to have to move out because if the people who were their customers found out that they were harboring a Japanese, they would not give them business. So I was lucky there was another guy from Livingston, a guy named Harry Makita, and he was paying a small amount or working for a little converted garage that he had lived in. He let me move in with him, and I continued in MJC.
Do you remember that day itself, December 7th? Do you remember how you found out what happened?
It was on the news. And the fact that my employers, when they heard about it, then they told me that I had to move out, because they didn't want to lose their business.
But so you find another place to live, and you're still going to school there at Modesto Junior College. But I imagine things started to change, and what you were allowed to do as a Japanese American probably changed.
Basically, the other students were very generous and didn't really discriminate. But then there was a war order that made all Japanese Americans move out of California, and they set up what they call detention camps. I think the total of 10, two in California, Tule Lake in Northern California, and Manzanar near the Nevada border. The other eight, the one I was sent to was in Colorado near a town called Granada, and they called the camp Amachi. And there are about 12,000 of us camped in that behind barbed wire and with guard towers and guards up in the tower with the guns and keep us from, trying to escape. And Tule Camp, one man tried to escape, and as he was going under the barbed wire, they shot him, killed him. Yeah, but that's the only one that happened.
So here you're born in America, you've gone to school with everybody else, they didn't had to treat you any differently, and now all of a sudden when there's a war, they see what your last name looks like, and well, you're not an American anymore. And tell me about what you guys had to do in Livingston. You went to your dad's church and you tried to store away some of your belongings?
Yeah, there's a main church building, a social hall building, and a third building that had a basement. What we did when we were being evacuated, we moved new things that were precious to us, put it in the basement under the third building, and sealed it, and I put a board across and nailed it shut. But it was all gone when he got back.
Well, and do you remember what that felt like to be basically ripped away from your life and made a prisoner, not knowing how long this is going to last, and you had your parents and six siblings that were in the same boat?
Yeah, but I don't know. At that age, just starting out college, it didn't really sink in till much later. And I remember in camp that a bunch of us college-age kids, we formed our own little gang and just played around together. Yeah, in fact, we formed like a baseball team and played baseball. But it was something that we just were able to accept and not to really get too angry about it. We just took it as it came and did whatever we could to enjoy ourselves.
What position did you play in baseball?
I was mostly in the outfield. I was not a very good athlete, so other better people were pitching and on the bases and catching, yeah.
And when you say you just took it as it came, you didn't let it bother you too much, Do you think that was influenced by your parents and how they handled it?
Yeah, they, my dad being a Methodist minister, my mother was from a rich family in the North Island of Hokkaido. Her father owned a lot of territory, including a small town. And I remember my mother telling me that her father was very kind to the townspeople that lived in his town. And she also told me about going with her older brother salmon spearing on the town, on the river up in Hokkaido. And then she finally started junior college in Tokyo. That's where she met my father, and that's where they got married.
What was the most challenging aspect of life in that internment camp? What was the hardest thing for you to deal with?
Actually, once we moved in and set up our barracks and maybe had something like 8 rooms in each barrack, our family had something like 8 of us, so we got something like 2 or 3 rooms and put up sheets to separate the rooms. Actually, we used to hold dances in the mess hall, and so we, had our own social activities that took up our interest, and we didn't feel so angry anymore. We just tried to enjoy life.
So at what point did you start thinking, hey, maybe I can go serve our country? Even though this country is holding me and my family prisoner behind barbed wire, I think I'm going to go serve.
Well, president at the time was FDR. He had all the Japanese lose our citizenship and our draft status, instead of, people who couldn't be drafted were called 4F. They made us 4Cs, enemy aliens. But after a while, I think because the war wasn't going too well, and he decided to draft us out of the camp. And I and another fellow from my camp from Los Angeles, we just volunteered. We said, we're not going to wait to be drafted. And I remember this is in Granada, Colorado, and they put us on trucks, took us out of camp down to the Granada Trace Station. It took us up to Denver, Colorado, to be inducted, and from Denver put on trains, took us down to New Orleans, Louisiana, and Camp Shelby. That's where we ended up training as infantrymen.
How did your parents feel about your decision to join the Army?
Oh, they accepted it. They thought maybe it's better than being stuck in camp doing nothing, just maybe even getting into trouble. No, they weren't, I guess. They thought it was probably the best thing to do, get me out of camp.
And did any of your brothers end up serving too, or no?
My older brother was already in the Army, and he was in training, I think, in New Jersey. And my older sister, the eldest one, his older sister Mary, she was a nurse, and she was already evacuated from the camp and was working as a nurse in some small town in New York State.
Was there any thought or consideration on your part that if you went and put on that uniform and fought for this country, that maybe justice would finally come to your family, that you could prove your loyalty or prove your worthiness as an American?
Well, I was too young to think about all these wonderful things I might have. No, I didn't think about it. I just took life as it is and volunteered. So I didn't really consider much about what was going to happen to the family.
And so you end up serving with the 442nd, famously all Japanese American unit, the most decorated unit from World War II. Did you make some friends right away with these other Japanese-American young men who were kind of in the same boat as you were?
The 442nd was formed in Hawaii. The Japanese-Americans in Hawaii, they were already being trained ahead of time before I went down to join them in Camp Shelby. So they made fun of us and said that these Japanese Americans from the States, you hit them on the head, they go kotonk. They called us kotonks. They thought that was funny.
Do you remember the first time you heard that slogan, go for broke? And did you know what it meant?
Yeah, I think so. We knew that going all out was a phrase that I think was very popular. You know, like they use it for actually the Hawaiian Japanese did a lot of crap shooting, and they'd always say, go for broke, go for broke. You know, that was their motto, and that's where we picked it up.
So what about friendships? Did you make some good buddies there at Camp Shelby?
Oh, yeah. In fact, one of my closest friend, a guy named Johnny Yamamoto from Los Angeles, we were sort of like fox old buddies. I think most of us paired off with a buddy. I think kind of look after each other. Well, I remember that we were running short of water in our canteen, so I volunteered for our squad to go down to the valley. I saw people walking across with the canteens, so I got the canteens from my squad and took off and went down there and found that there was a well off to the right, and there was even a bucket and a rope on it so that we could fill up our canteens. But came back and they said, don't look, don't look. I said, what happened? They said, Johnny got shot. He was dead. And it just really broke me up, and my best buddy was shot and killed from an artillery shell, actually. Anyway, after that, I think I took up with this guy that was from Los Angeles as my next buddy.
Well, I don't mean to interrupt, but we need to catch our first break. And I also think that we're going to need to revisit that tragic incident you just mentioned so we all understand the implications for you. Joe Haritani of Sonora, California is our guest today. You can pull up some photos of him then and now at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this.